Hey, we're Amy and Christina, two friends who got pregnant around the same time, started an Instagram to vent about how much we didn't know, and realized there were a ton of you out there who felt the exact same way.
Who'd have thought? Not us. But once we realized we weren't the only ones frantically Googling things at 3 a.m., we thought, why not take it up a notch?
And here we are with a podcast. We're bringing in the experts on all things pregnancy, parenting, and women's health because, let's be real, we're all just trying to survive this journey.
So whether you're here for the real talk, expert advice, or just need some adult conversation between diaper changes, we got you. Welcome to the What I Wish I Knew podcast. Thanks for being part of our growing community. Okay, welcome to today's podcast. I'm here with my wonderful friend, Amita, who we met through the Renaissance Business Center in San Francisco. And we've kind of kept in touch since. You were one of my students. But I'm so glad that I've continued to follow your journey because I learned so much from you. And that's why I brought you here today. So what I'd love to do is just start with who you are. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, thank you, Christina, for that great introduction. That was quite the compliment. Thank you very, very much. And I strive to not only help myself be better each day, but if me doing that helps another person, that is just icing on the cake, you know? So my name is Amita Basra. I am a Ayurvedic practitioner. I have my own practice. I'm currently going to school to extend my studies into a doctor, which we can't call it doctor here. I think we have to call it clinical specialist. So Ayurvedic clinical specialist, but that's the translation. And I'm also a registered nurse, having worked in the hospital for 16 years now, doing some contract work outside the hospital. But my main focus is on Ayurveda and helping other people empower themselves by learning this holistic health science, which people don't know what Ayurveda is. It's actually the sister science of yoga. And it literally means Ayurveda. And Ayur means life and Veda means science. So it's a life science of bringing our mind, body, and our spirit into alignment so that we can have optimal vitality, longevity, and immunity.
And where does that originate from?
Oh, India. India. And they say they have it dated back to about 5,000 years ago. But that is the written word. Before then, it's called shlokas, is what you learn everything is, which is little verses of poems. And they were supposedly saying to each other or spoken before that. So it's been around for quite a long time.
A really long time.
Yeah.
A really, really long time. And this is what I loved about, you know, when I did my yoga teacher training, for me as a Westerner, right? Mm-hmm. That yoga was just the asanas. And then you learn about Ayurveda a little bit, right? But you learn
for sure.
Yoga is a whole lifestyle, and Ayurveda is one portion of that, correct?
Yes. Well, so actually, they're sister sciences, so they're two different paths.
Okay.
There's a yogic path, and then, you know, there's an Ayurveda path. Some things line up, whereas you think of the yamas and the niramas and all that, and that lines up. The chakra system is also the same. The koshas, which are the bodies for people. So the chakras are the energetic centers of the wheels, the yamas and niramas. Those are the things that you want to do or avoid doing. And then the chakra, wait, what was the other thing? Sorry. The koshas, which are the different bodies. So there's the mental body, physical body, emotional body, heart body, bliss body, and then the maya kosha. These are things that cross-reference, and that's why they're called sister sciences. However, in Ayurveda, there is use of meat products.
Oh,
like then in severe emaciation, we use goat meat soups. There are a couple other things that, support using animal products. And therefore, you know, on the yogic path, to do no harm, you are not going to be consuming meat if you are completely immersed in the yogic path. However, you know, as my teacher always says, all paths meet go to the sit on top.
Yeah.
Basically, no matter where you go, whatever path you take, whether it's more worldly, whether it's Ayurvedic, whether it's yogic, whether it's something else that like Dr. Sebi has his own thing. There's a lot of different people who have different really great philosophies out there. You are going to make it to the top because you're on the way there.
Anyway. Yes.
So, yeah.
So you come from an Indian background, correct?
I do, yes.
And so that's where a lot of this comes from. Because you went down the RN path first.
Yes.
And then it's like you kind of came back to yourself.
Totally. In a way, yeah, very much so. So my parents didn't actually teach me this growing up. And I knew about it through things we did, like things that way we ate certain ways. We always boiled our milk and different things like that. However, it was not a science as I would talk. It was just things we did in our house. And as I grew up, I got more and more kind of disassociated from my Indian roots because I was trying really hard to fit into Western society. Even though I was born here, my parents are immigrated here. So I was really raised in a very closed off kind of household. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't really until I came to California and it's way more diverse that I started to kind of step back into my roots. And I ended up having a dream about Ayurveda during one of my own health crises. I actually went into addiction recovery many years ago, and I ended up pretty like maybe the first month out of rehab, I had a dream. And I had taken time off from work to care for myself. And I knew the Western route wasn't working for me. One, because it was never taught to me. So here I am as a nurse, not knowing how to take care of my own disease.
Right.
Second of all, is I was put on a slew of medications. I was not sleeping. I was drinking tons of coffee. Like, it was tons of coffee to stay awake. I was having heart palpitations.
Oh my goodness.
Just not working at all. And on top of it, there's the stigmatism of having to work through having the addiction as being something of my health history. And so I went to sleep and I had a dream about Ayurveda. There was like a weird dinner party. And so I mentioned the word and I literally woke up and I Googled it. And I was like, what? I was like, I didn't know this existed. I was so like, I spent a few hours researching. I found a school that was close to me and I applied. There's three schools, again, being in California, there's three schools here, which I think there's more and more schools coming across. But ones that are actually doing the full degrees, learning from the text, the Vedic text. And I signed up and I got a call the next day and I enrolled. And I enrolled for myself.
That's awesome.
You know, because I was like, I don't know what to do. And then I got better so quickly that people were like, what have you been doing? You know, people were like, what happened? And so I started teaching my friends and family. I started teaching my patients at the bedside. And then it was my patients, actually, who were like, can we come see you? And I was like, what do you mean come see me? You know?
Like, I'm already seeing.
And then my patient was like, hey, like, have a practice. Like, I'll come see you. I was like, yeah. And I was like, oh my gosh. And then I started my business. And so it was very organic.
Yeah.
It was very, very much organic. But not only has Ayurveda taught me how to care for myself and how to guide others to care for themselves, in a very beautiful way, because the nice thing about Ayurveda is it's quite simple once you learn it. You know, it does take some, there's a couple of layers to it. Once you learn yourself and you learn the science, it makes sense. It's not something that you have to pound into yourself or memorize. You're just right. Like, oh, that clicks, right?
It feels natural.
It feels very natural, but Ayurveda also really helped my healing of a lot of my own trauma of being raised as a non-white person in the Western world, especially on the East Coast. So, which is still better than some other places in the U.S.
Right.
You know, is my little favorite. So, yeah, it's been a very special journey for me. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, of course. Let's talk about Ayurveda and just like some of the basics. Like, if we were to break this down really, like, Ayurveda 101, what would that look like?
So Ayurveda is based on the five elements, and that's actually split down into three doshas, which is what people hear about. And so there's vata, which is air and ether, then there's pitta, which is fire and water, and there's kapha, which is water and earth. And what you do is you come to see an Ayurveda practitioner, you can take quizzes online, you can read books, but you basically find out what your basic constitution is. However, if you're dealing with issues in your day-to-day life or complications or some sort of symptomology that you're not liking, you're not going to be focusing on, people get a little duped. They think, oh, I need to just do everything in the way that my constitution is. No, you need to find out what the imbalance is. And that's why you would go see a practitioner, because they're going to help you understand where this is broken down into, whether it's in this air, fire, or earth. And the reason I talk about that is that you use that understanding of the qualities. So let me talk a little bit about, I'm going to just talk about one, because otherwise it does get confusing. And so I
know we're going to be here a while.
Yeah, and we'll be here a while. Which you're welcome to come hang out. I mean, I'm happy to teach you all, but the Vata, so let's stay with the Vata dosha, which is that air and ether. And the reason I'm choosing that is right now we're into the fall season, which is Vata. Just literally think about how the wind kicks up in the fall. So therefore it is air and elements. So it is dry, cold, rough, mobile. Just think about the qualities of air. That's how I would use it for you to understand the food choices that you're making. So I teach you about different foods, because not all fruits and vegetables are the same. Not when you have imbalances or you're trying to cater to your constitution, right? Same thing with your different exercise routine, or maybe some breathing exercises, or the sleep schedule that you have, or any herbs that you might be taking. And then I'll start to get you to understand why those qualities are getting amplified and making your issues or complaints worse, or why it might actually help ground and pacify those. Mm-hmm. And that's how Ayurveda works, is it really becomes this very simple way of looking at some things just through the elements.
Yeah. And you just mentioned something I think that's important to point out too, is that it's not just about the foods you consume. It's how you move your body and also how you're breathing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, which is so, and also just to recap, it's, I can have a different makeup of my doshas versus you, but we all go into the same season together. And so we might have to pivot those three things, what we're eating, how we're moving our bodies and breathing, to stay in balance for that season.
Absolutely. No, you got it. I love it. Yes, guys, which means that kudos to you, and also kudos to me, because I mean, I explained
legit
enough for you to be able to.
You're a great teacher.
And then, like, the way it also starts to become more layers on itself is that it's not just the seasons; it's also the times of the day that are ruled by these kind of elements, as well as the stages of digestion. And this is how, like, I start to teach my clients, is this, like, enveloping it. And there's plenty of people who do courseworks at yoga studios, and there's some great books out there. Let me try to think. Prakriti is a really good one to learn about your constitution. Change Your Schedule, Change Your Life by Dr. Suhas is another really good. So those are two really good beginner Ayurveda books. Yeah. If anyone who's listening is a little bit piqued in interest and wants to go for like a low stakes investment.
Yes. Yeah. Ayurveda. It also has to do with kind of, I don't want to say the season of life, but maybe the phase of life as well.
Phases of life, totally, as well. Like right now, you and I are in our pitta stage of life. We're building businesses, we're building families, we're building our careers, building homes, you know. And in the beginning stages of life, we're in the earth stage, kapha stage of life. It's because we're children, we're literally building. They're literally, I mean, and for anyone who has children or around children, which is basically everybody, they multiply. I mean, your earth building, they have snot. That's why there's so much snot. It's like literally that is the cup of nature, is mucusy, unctuous, oiliness. So that's why it's producing, because they're growing. So this is
never heard that.
Yeah, yeah. So that's why so much snot.
That's hilarious.
Actually helping them grow. And if they didn't have so much, and also that's the same thing that happens with women in pregnancy.
Okay.
All of a sudden, the lung areas are more, this is a kapha region of the body. The mind gets low and sluggish and foggy. There's mucus. There's like, there's all this heaviness, right?
I have never had so much mucus. I'm currently for those of you who can't see us, I'm currently sitting in my bed. Because this is the only place I can get away from my family. And what do I have like in bed with me is a tissue box. Because like I have constant mucus. I can't. It's crazy.
Yep. Yeah.
That's, and that's really wild.
You're literally building a human.
Well, yeah.
So your earth has to increase. You have to increase. And that's why a pregnancy, you know, they always say give the women like all the sweets and delicious things that she wants. They should always be appetizing in nature. Now, you don't want to squash your digestion because you are building a child. So you need to eat to only two-thirds of a capacity. You do want to eat on your meal times and at bigger amounts and have smaller snacks so that you're not squashing that digestive fire, because it is working hard making a human. But, you know, you do get all like ghee, milk, dates. These are all things that are highly favored in pregnancy. And yeah, it's basically there's a, like a whole story. Like I like back in the days, like in India, you know, you sometimes didn't have certain products in your village. You might have to go 5-6 hours to get a fruit or something else that's not grown anywhere near you. But the husband will go, because they say that to deny a pregnant woman's craving is so disheartening to the pregnancy that he has to go, because it's for the longevity of his child.
Go down with this.
And I mean, we don't stir too far from it. You know, we do have this whole ice cream thing and the pickles and, you know, this is the things that I've always heard, you know. But the other spoon of that is that pickles and ice cream are also very heavy. So we don't talk about that, right?
No.
Because the pregnant woman can have ice cream occasionally, but having it hold something so cold and so heavy consistently, it's much better for her to have warm milks with some cinnamon, some turmeric, some cardamom, put a little bit of date syrup or maple syrup in that, you know, rose jam. It's also going to be so cooling for women who are a little bit more on the heating side during their pregnancy. Yeah, these are much more supportive to the pregnant woman. And you can maybe add some vanilla. Like if you really want in that ice cream, add the vanilla extract, you know, make it all fancy.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and same with pickles. The sour taste is very heavy. It's acidic. So for women who are going through, you know, the heartburn of pregnancy.
Oh, they're not
your friend. No, they're not your friend. So how else can you have that kind of like taste into your diet and other things like that?
Pregnancy has been really interesting for me because I haven't experienced, and I was like this with my first as well. I haven't experienced cravings like that. I also don't eat more. If anything, I eat the same amount, maybe like one additional snack, you know, but I don't like lean into that. Whereas like some of my friends very much have like leaned into it. Everybody is different, right?
Oh, totally. Everybody is totally different. But actually they say, and this is more of a Western thinking, is that you only need a glass of milk more a day calorically to support your healthy pregnancy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And which is, well, that's a whole other story. But so are there different, so like I wanted to go through with you the different phases and how we can apply Ayurveda to the different phases of like trying to conceive. We just went through pregnancy, so we don't need to tap into that super deeply, but then also postpartum. Like, does Ayurveda recognize those three and then like shift like what we should be eating, how we should be moving, all that other stuff?
Absolutely. So basically, even preconception, unless the conception happens by chance, the woman is immediately to go to a nutritionally dense but light diet and to modify her life so that there is no too much fear, anger. So, you know, like substances got to go. Like it's crazy news channels got to go. Fresh fruits and vegetables gotta come in. It's not even just the woman's job to do this. It's the whole family's job.
Oh wow.
To protect the woman from these things. So nobody's supposed to be coming home and picking fights or saying rude things for no reason. Or if, you know, bad things are happening, someone else needs to go take care of it, even if that woman normally would go help take out, be the one who people rely on when things are going a little rough in the family. So it's very much the whole, it takes a village. And yeah, this woman is doted on all the way through her postpartum period. Which postpartum takes fully 3 years for the woman's body to get back to pre-pregnancy state. According to Ayurveda, now it doesn't mean that you can't have a child prior to that, but it just says that that is your pre-pregnancy state.
Mm.
3 years. So, which we give, 3 months?
Yeah.
So, it really is a whole thing. So in Ayurveda, you would normally do what they call is the whole protocol that you do prior to, I'm not even going to go into sensors because I don't want to get too confusing on here, but there's a whole protocol that we've for conceiving. And actually, not only the woman is requested to do a detox of the body, but so is the man.
Oh.
To have the best sperm and ovum meet. And then if you get into it even more, you can bring in the Vedic astrology side, which is called Jyotish. Bring that in and conceive on this day of this moon at this time. Be the chicken on the east side of the mountain. I don't know. It can get really detailed. And you don't have, you know, that's more of the astrology side that will bring in that. And the Vedic astrology it serves more as like remedies through chanting and offerings to things and going by phases of the moon. But yeah, so it's required that usually both parties go through a detox, and then they also follow a certain protocol while during the conception is happening. Then once conception is happening, then things do shift to the woman. You know, basically the woman is very doted on. And in Indian culture, you know, this is speaking more on the culture, and some people may not agree with me, some disagree, but women are very highly revered and doted on for two things in Indian culture: when they're getting married and when they're about to have a baby. And some of it feels kind of weird, especially someone who grew up in a Western country, because I feel like, well, there should be that recognition of push-pull in everyday life. But then I learn about some of these ancient rituals, and I have a little bit more understanding of why the woman is so much doted on during this time. And so the woman will slowly introduce different things month by month. And the fourth month is really considered a very special month, because that's when officially becomes two hearts are existing. Aww. And mom at the same time. And this is when it becomes like all the music in the house has to have a certain beat. Going for walks should be in pretty areas. Everything that the woman is intaking, because now the mom and baby's emotions are going like this. Oh, sorry, my hands are going back and forth, guys. And they're basically shunting from one to the other. So that is why it becomes very revered in that stage. Then as into the eighth, ninth one, then there's still special care in foods and herbs, and also just regulating the bowels. If anyone's been pregnant, I'm sure they can understand that.
Yep.
That staircase that you need to climb sometimes, and just having a regular daily bowel movement, which is really important. It's really, really important. So there's supporting that. And then you're also going to be doing like different oil packs on the pelvis area and the hip area.
What is an oil pack?
So you basically, oil pack, what I have patients do is clients, because I don't have patients, because I'm not a doctor. You take gauze and you make basically a square or a rectangle, depending where you're going to put it. So if you're going to put it where your thigh and your, why can't I think of this name right now? The iliac crest right here, right? You are going to take that. You'll take the oil, the herbalized oil. It's an Ayurvedic herbalized oil, and you'll warm it up in the double boil method, because you never really want to directly heat oil unless you're eating, cooking with it. And then you're going to dip the gauze in there, and you're going to put it on the body so that the body can absorb it. And then when it gets cold, you dip it back in and you put it back on. I could share that with you.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, and it just helps the body so that it can elasticize open and elasticize back in without having too many complications. I definitely have seen it be very beneficial to women's hip pain. First birth, you know, because that's real, and you're sitting to breastfeed, so hip pain while sitting to breastfeed is not always fun. And then even post birth, there'll be like the tying of the, it's kind of like similar to like the tying of the bones, and if you've ever heard of the ritual, but they'll tie the abdomen post birth, so just again to help just allow everything to settle back.
Yep.
Into place. But it's not, again, not supposed to be aggressive. It's tied with just a piece of cloth. Like today we have these crazy belly bands that people are like trying to shimmy into. No, this is like you take in the old days, they take sari, and they just, because that's what was around, and you take any piece of cloth and you tie the belly just to hold some support. So again, it doesn't have to be aggressive at all. And then post-birth, there is a very, usually anywhere from 0 to 5 days, 0 to 7 days, that you actually have a very light diet. You're going to have mostly soups, white rice. It's going to have digested spices in it. You will start taking either a ghee with herbs in it or a liquid with herbs in it, depending on what that particular person needs. And that is because your digestive fire is not working. You literally expelled a human from your body. And all your power went into that, you know, and then you had a huge blood loss, which is supposed to happen, you know, as a placenta detaches. So because of that, your digestive strength is not really high. And that, again, another thing we do in America is, what's the first thing? Burger and fries. Get that sushi. Like, people are getting all the things that they're not, a cold cut sandwich, you know, all these very hard to digest, cold, rough foods that are not supportive of the digestion. And I was not saying that you can't like have a little nibble of someone's stuff if it's like a real craving. It's just you don't want to be sustaining on that. And that even in when I worked in Chinatown, so I worked in labor and delivery for most of my hospital years. And I worked at one point in Chinatown in Boston, and we always had chicken and rice. Like a soupy chicken and rice, because that's the only thing the Chinese have post-birth.
Yeah.
You know, and they also won't have cold water. They'll only have warm water. So this is not just, you know, from this, Lynn. This has been known across, you know, different ethnicities for a long time now. And we just have come into this other place. I think, I don't know if the ice cold water is coming in because a lot of the medications, like a lot of pain medications, one of their side effects is people start to excessively get hot. And this is just an observation, having worked, you know, sometimes people temperatures will raise. So I don't know if it's from that or if it's from other side effects of medication. Also hormones in themselves. But the more you have cold, the more it's actually going to dysregulate you. Yeah, isn't that interesting? When you're really, really thirsty, the best thing to do is have hot water. It will quench your thirst way quicker. Or milk. I'll tell you, I've been in India when it was like 118 degrees, 120 degrees, and it's hot. And nothing would cool me down faster than milk or some sugar. Milk and sugar are really good for cooling the body.
So interesting, because it feels so opposite of what we're taught in Western culture, right? So like, I guess my next question for you is like, how has this directly, what's the word? Words are so hard when you're pregnant.
They are.
You spent all this time learning Western medicine, and now you've basically retrained your brain for Ayurveda. And what are some things that like you were telling people when you were a labor and delivery nurse that now you would never tell anybody again?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I got to the point where people would come in, and I get it. People are pregnant. They just want their baby here. They're taking the time off. The traffic's not so bad. I get it. Like, you're miserable. You can't poop. Can't sleep. Yeah, no, there's no position that's comfortable. But it got to a point where I'd tell people towards my end of my training, being in the hospital, not training, working in the hospital, I'd be like, just go home. Don't stay here. The longer you stay here, the more they're going to mess with you. Like, you know, whereas before I was like, oh, you know, wait it out, or we can offer you an induction. No, go home. Go home. Let your body do it on its own. Now, if you have some other complication and something else is going on, like there's no anything coming from me, because in those are personal circumstances. But if you are a normal pregnancy, being in a hospital, you want to be in the hospital the least amount of time, because they will mess with you. It's just because you have to. That's how the numbers are done. They have to follow certain ways. There's certain protocols that need to be followed. And if those protocols aren't followed, then it could be considered misconduct in medicine, which no one ever thinks about. But so the doctors have to also protect themselves. And also, then the hospital doesn't get reimbursed. So it's not just like, it's like, oh, everything's done. It becomes a multifaceted problem.
It's a business.
It's a business just like anything else. And it's the pharmaceutical industry which is driving that, which I'm not going to dive too much into. But yeah, another thing is I would really promote people drinking room temperature water because it really messes with the digestion. I mean, our bodies are at 98 degrees.
Yeah.
So what is ice cold water going to do to your stomach? Fire. It's literally a fire in there.
Yeah.
You're putting it out. Another thing is I would really promote people in being able to get themselves a quiet space, you know, really let go of working so much, allowing themselves to get off of work at 7-8 months of pregnancy and start focusing on the home if they can, which is not a luxury most people have, but if they could, to do that or to reduce in some way, to prioritize their mind, to learn ways of being able to cut off the outside world, to start relying on their community, making food trains, you know, having that conversation with their husband, like, whose family is going to come stay here? How are we going to deal with that? How are we going to deal with the dynamics? Is this going to be more stressful for the mother or is it going to be helpful? Is this a sacrifice that the husband might have to make because the woman's family is going to feel more supportive to the woman? Or maybe it's not. Maybe, you know, or do you need to look for outside help? Is there something that we needed to be saving for? Is not having help inside the house, which is unfortunate that this is something that people have to, you know, it becomes a financial expense, but at a certain time, it's for the long, again, in Ayurveda, everything's for the longevity. So yes, even though it might be that finance is tight for a little bit, the parents get more adequate rest. They're eating good food. The child is then getting good adequate breast milk, also getting parents who are less fatigued, who have more emotional capacity. All these things matter because in the end, this, you know, 6 to 8, 9 months of being financially tight compared to having to deal with health issues or sleep issues or depletion on the mother's side, or maybe child attachment issues on like way down the line as well.
Right.
These are real things. Oh, that's the other thing. Oh, yeah. Putting baby on the mom's breast immediately. Like, we never used to do that. We used to, like, cut the cord. We drain the blood. All this stuff. Now I'm, like, slap that baby on the mom's breast. Like, immediately. Like, there's, even if the baby is needing some sort of intervention because it's not as taking a while to breathe, I, towards the end, would do as much as I possibly could on mom. Because I feel like that really dysregulates both mom and baby. I have seen, you know, where parents and mom have been separated from baby because of all this medical intervention and the mom gets really sick. And again, what I used to start to do at the end is I'd be like, my mom started getting sick. And the baby was separate. I'd be like, we need to get this mom to the baby or the baby to the mom. And immediately the mom starts to get better in most cases. Yeah, are there exceptions to the rule? I mean, get it. I'm being recorded here. And again, this is my scope of experience. So, you know. But I do believe in it firmly, is that, you know, you get a mom and it starts to look a lot better.
You're
looking at a mom who's now able to self-regulate and co-regulate with her child. And so there's things like that. I won't even touch co-sleeping on here because I am being recorded and I don't
know.
But there, I definitely have some thoughts that have changed that were very, very much one way and have done a complete 180.
Yeah, and another conversation that we've had on this podcast was with a pediatrician who, her name's Rebecca Diamond, and she recognizes that people co-sleep and it's about figuring out how to do it safely, right? So like removing shame from the topic because it is so black and white when honestly being a parent, especially a parent of a newborn, is like so many shades of gray, right? So like how do we take the stigma away from it and talk about it and talk about how we can do it safely. So like, Rebecca, refer to that episode with Rebecca on that one. But what I love that you mentioned is like part of the end of the pregnancy is figuring out your support system, right? And what things are going to look like. And that is definitely something that I have changed between my first pregnancy and now.
Yeah.
It's like I have definitely put a bigger emphasis on what is my nutrition going to look like? What is my environment going to look like? what foods do I want to eat? Because I recognize that I'm 37 and pregnant, and I could potentially go straight from postpartum into perimenopause.
Mm-hmm.
And like optimizing my hormones is going to be super crucial for me.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. And just being able to take that time to regulate your hormones, like it is possible that that would happen. It's most likely going to be, unless your mother went into a menopause early, because that kind of stuff is more genetic. But is that, you know, you just have so much of a hormonal storm postpartum anyway. So that's, they say, like, there's like regular oil massages that needs to be done. You know, herbs are followed closely. Herbs that are compatible with breastfeeding, of course. These are all part of postpartum.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it's good to be aware of, like, okay, this is what could happen to me, what couldn't happen to me, and how can I help myself?
Right. Right. How do I make myself also a priority? Right. Because I think a lot of people put, a lot of people put it, it's about the baby. They want to see the baby. It's all about, like, is the baby, but also, and I don't want to sound selfish when I say this, but I think postpartum mothers get kind of put to the side. Think about it. We get in Western medicine, we get 1 6-week appointment, but the doctor is seeing our baby every how many weeks, right? Like, nobody's ever checking in on me. What's up with that?
Yep. No, absolutely. The woman is definitely, I mean, your daughter, you must give up this seat for elderly and pregnant women, right? But what happens with the postpartum mom who just bled out and then, you know, had to be transfused and then got an infection and now is trying to hold her baby on the bus? Like, come on. You know what I mean? There's so much, or just has it, or it doesn't even have to be extreme. Just a woman who, for goodness sakes, is just trying to do her day to day. And that's a newborn that's waking every 1 to 2 hours, you know, has a diaper rash. And she's just tired. She had to give birth, you know? And so, yeah, it's definitely a whole thing.
It is a whole, I mean, even think about women who are on their periods. It's almost the same, right? You're just bleeding out, living through life.
And the thing is that people should be able to take time off during their cycles. Women are more productive during and this is another thing I have to teach my clients about, is like, okay, are you in a job where you can do that, where you can double stack some of your meetings around your ovulation when you have more energy, and then have no FaceTime with anybody on the days of your period, or even be able to just be like out of office? Because we're meant to not be in office. We're meant to, even during the luteal phase, to be just start slowing down on meetings, slowing down on presentations, do more reflecting, more creative stuff, taking those days of your period off, being able to meditate, being able to do self-care. Because you are losing blood. You're literally losing blood, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, I don't know if it's because we live in California, that it feels more accepted there.
Yes.
Or if like the general world is moving more that way. What are your feelings? I know you live in the world, so you might be a little bit biased, but like, do you feel like business is going well, obviously?
Yeah, no, business is going well, and I'm very, very grateful for that. I do think people are becoming more and more open. I also think there is misrepresentation of what other people of color find valuable, because, you know, a lot of Latinos, Mexicans, they have their own medicine, same way that, like, other races, they all have their own medicine. So this is not too strange to them to be doing something along this lines.
Yeah,
I think it's very much, you know, the colonialized places, the Western mentality. But however, like, even in India, it's so backwards in so many ways. I mean, the things that are happening to women over there in some ways is very disempowering. But then there are things that are revered, and like, okay, if a woman's going through her menstruation, like, there is a little bit of respect and honor given to that, which we don't have here. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely not black and white. I do think that women are starting to speak up more and more for what they need. I think that men are taking the time to understand the opposite sex more and more.
Yeah.
And therefore, I do think that with compassion, understanding, and time, that we will get to where we need to go. I just don't know when it will be and where it will be. And I do my best to work on the things inside myself, because even like what I've been taught, you know, growing up in this country or from my family or from my culture, I've had to, they always say like the hardest thing you've ever had to learn is to unlearn.
Yeah.
Decondition oneself. So I just start with the deconditioning of myself, and I find that the more and more that I do that, the more and more my world, I don't get me wrong, like there's some stuff out there that I don't feel like I touch at all, but the more and more my world does seem to be brighter and brighter and more optimistic in these ways.
Definitely. And that's where a lot of my own personal motivation comes from for this. I felt really let down by Western medicine in a lot of different ways, right? I mean, even from a capacity that, you know, I had a miscarriage last year that I only just now paid off, and I had health insurance, right? So like, I've almost given birth to an entirely other baby by the time that I've paid off my miscarriage that I'm not sure was handled the best way anyway, right? But like, just the way that it's been has led me to try to find other avenues. And I'm so grateful that those things exist. Like, I'm so grateful, Amita, that you exist, you know, and the Ayurvedic world exists, because I knew that like it got to a point where in my gut, I was like, this can't be it. This can't be how it works, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There has to be something better. And if something's existed for 5,000 years plus, like obviously something is working.
Absolutely, right? Exactly. Something is working. And, you know, what is like after having an experience like that, you know, going through a miscarriage, having a decision, only because I know kind of how things unfolded for you, to still have to be having to deal with this financial tie and not be getting any assistance around it it's really just gets deeper. The wound becomes deeper. It doesn't allow the healing that needs to happen to occur sometimes. And some people don't have the resources to talk to anybody about this stuff. They may not have access to support groups or whatever, because they might be out in further areas. And it does become disheartening. And women are definitely ostracized in the healthcare industry. But it doesn't mean that anybody doesn't go through this. I mean, going through cancer, people who have very low kidney function, people who have had IBS so badly that they don't go to the bathroom for several weeks at a time. I mean, they have all been dismissed over and over. People who have chronic pain issues who have just been constantly dismissed over and over and over again. And I'm not saying that I do anything. I really think probably like the biggest thing that I do is that I can hold space.
Yeah.
You know, don't get me wrong, I will teach you and I will help with recipes and I will motivate you and I know all the herbs and stuff like that. But it's just that sometimes you just need somebody to listen to you.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, I literally had that conversation at the playground with a woman this morning who has an autoimmune disorder.
Yeah.
And it was just holding space for her to talk about it. And like, even then, she said diet was the only thing that's helped her, and also her I think 5-year-old kid who was having behavioral issues. It was all in their gut.
Yeah.
And it was like, you don't realize how much sugar is in things, like, or how much additives there are even in our spices, she said.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, like, don't use the taco seasoning, make your own, because if you look at it,
it's got citric acid, it's got all this other, it's got stuff that is not spices. It's got a lot of fillers.
Exactly. So it's just like, I feel like we've been duped.
Yeah. Oh, we've totally been duped. We've been duped. It's just like, and I was having this conversation with someone else the other day. You can walk, if you don't have a car or access to anything, right? You can walk and probably get yourself some liquor and some cigarettes easily. But you get to a grocery store, Mm-hmm. No, you can't.
Like produce.
Yeah, with fresh produce. Exactly. Things that are not canned or like mass produced with lots of extra additives, you can't get to the grocery store. And it's like, okay, we are being cut down. Our life force is constantly being cut down and makes us less argument. I mean, this is a whole different tip. I'm going to finish my tangent real quick, though. Because it makes you less argumentative. It makes you more docile. It makes you more tired. It makes you more lazy. And therefore, you go to your 9-to-5. You don't make a fuss. You're not trying to create change, and you're not branching out into your whole full self, because that's what creates problems for organized society.
Okay.
So, and what better way than to just, you know, use your life force up in this 9-to-5 and you're retired.
That's it.
You're gone.
What would I do?
No, but most people live either a vegetable of life or they pass away because they didn't have the chance to really take care of themselves in the way that they needed to prior to that.
Totally. And so it's wonderful to start now. I think being pregnant is a really great opportunity to be, or just, I mean, like, there are a lot of different phases in a woman's life where you can do this. You first start getting your period, you know, when you're trying to conceive, going through menopause, all of those different things are wonderful, like, triggers for us as women, I think, to start taking care of ourselves.
Absolutely. Or they end up having a sick child. I mean, it's mostly women who come in. It's because women tend to be the caretakers. I'm not saying that there are not, but I have an affinity for working with women. I've worked with women as a nurse, and now I work primarily with women in my practice just because that's who I attract. But is that, they either have a sick child, they have a sick husband, they have a sick father, they have a sick mother. It's, you know, so there's something that's pulling them in.
Yeah.
To bring this knowledge.
I'll trigger it out. So, Amita, we are coming to the end of this. So I wanted to give you the opportunity to say anything else that you wanted to say that we may not have hit on. I feel like we could probably talk for 2 hours, but, you know.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I encourage everybody to, if you don't know about Ayurveda or any holistic health, I mean, mostly what I talk about is Ayurveda. It's just to hop on YouTube, learn a little bit of something, check out those two books, Prakriti, which is Prakriti, or Change Your Schedule, Change Your Life. Some references to see if it's something that speaks to you, because it is quite simple. And if you can apply it, you know, take what you can. Take what applies to you and use it, and you will see some benefit. That I know. That I absolutely know. And then, of course, if you want to learn a little bit more about Ayurveda and me, I have a website, which is www.kremshakti, K-R-E-E-M, SHAKTI.com. And I also have handles on YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram, where I also put out some videos and some free information, little tidbits you can add to your day. And that's all it is just try and see what you can add to your day. But really, it is the ultimate anti-aging. We're all scrambling in this society trying to figure out what we can suck in, inject, whatever. You want to know how to age gracefully? This is it. This is definitely the way. It's just basically being like the river as it goes over the stones.
Oh my God, that was beautiful. We'll end with that. But I'll put all those links in the podcast description too for everybody. Amita, thank you so much for your time and your wisdom and your general light. Oh yeah, I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for your time and being here and asking me these questions so we could share with everybody.
Thanks for hanging out with us today. I hope you like what you heard, or if you're just like, yo, these two are my people, don't forget to hit subscribe and leave a review.
And hey, if you want to keep the combo going, come find us on Instagram at @whatiwishiknew_. We are always up for chatting about the real stuff.
We'll be back next time with more expert interviews, real life stories, and a couple of laughs. Till then, remember, we're all in this together. Bye.
Bye.
Every day is something new, but change don't